really excited to be here again with you. It's always fun to come up and be able to share things that God is showing me and speaking to me about, and I get to have the privilege of sharing that with you. Today I'm going to be talking about the mothering of God, which is something that I can't remember ever hearing anybody preach on in church. One of the books that I just finished reading, that I read for seminary, was written by a woman who lived most of her life in just a little room on the side of a church. Her name was Julian of Norwich. They don't really know what her name was, but they gave her that name because she lived in this church in Norwich, so that was how they gave her her name. She was considered a wise and holy woman, and she was a spiritual director. And many people would come and be spiritually directed by her through this little window of her room. They would come, and she would spiritually direct them, and they would be on their way. And she spoke about Jesus being our true mother. A quote from her says, "Our own true mother, Jesus, he who is all love, bears us to joy and endless living. Blessed may he be." And she goes on to say that he uses the skills of a wise mother. 2.5 years ago, when I started seminary, one of the first classes that I took was the Ministry of Reconciliation. And we had to choose a topic of some type form of reconciliation that we wanted God to speak to us on. And I chose the topic of reconciliation to God through self as a woman. My journey has been one that has not allowed me to even stand in front of a church and speak. And so it's been a privilege to be able to do that with all of you a few times, and it is today. So for the last 2.5 years, I have been asking who I am as a woman made in the image of God. One of the first verses that I looked at when I looked at reconciling myself to God as a woman was Genesis 1:27, which says, "So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them." So we are all made in the image of God, men and women. And that is something that I think as a woman, I don't hear much about in church. We don't think of God in terms of the female very often. In fact, when I was putting this message together and looking for scriptures and thinking, where do I see God as a woman in the Bible? And that verse popped out at me, and God took me back there. So what I decided to do today was I really spent a lot of time reflecting on who Jesus is, and how I see Jesus and the spirit of Jesus, the spirit of God, reflected in women. And so I chose to use the women that are closest to me, the women in my life, to do that. Last year, I asked Arden if I could speak for Mother's Day. I felt God giving me this message of the mothering of God a year ago. And then last year, right before Mother's Day, my grandmother, whom I love dearly, had a massive stroke. And so I ended up spending Mother's Day and spending the month of May in Burbank at my grandmother's bedside while she was dying. Last year I was in a very unique place in my life, and that, let's see if I can get it. I love this picture. It's a kind of an old picture, but I like it because my grandmother was really into generations. She was always having us take generational pictures of the generations. And this was a spontaneous one. I have many pictures of the women in my family and all of the generations of us. Last year, I was really reflective of the fact that I was a granddaughter, a daughter, a mother, and a grandmother. And so I was in between. I was right in the middle. And it was a very unique time of life. And I was so excited to be able to share that. And I had my message prepared, and then I was called to Burbank. So this was just a spontaneous picture taken many years ago at the beach, and my grandmother's the one in the front there, and she's with the Lord now. What I love about my grandmother is she taught me where I came from, and she instilled that in me, not to forget that, that my ancestors are a part of who I am. And my grandmother lives on in me, and I'm thankful for her. And I hope grandmother gets to watch this wherever she is. And there she is. The things that my grandmother taught me was she taught me how to give. My grandmother gave of her time. She gave generously with her money, and she was not a wealthy woman. She actually was a widow for the second half of her life. Her husband died when she was 49, and she never remarried. She gave. She gave to me my whole life. I was privileged to have her a part of my life for 50 years, or 51, actually. And so she taught me the value of giving my life away. My grandmother was also a very good listener. She was somebody all of my life that I could go to and just tell her everything. And I did. I would tell her a lot. And I remember my sister had told me a while back that she used to love me coming down and telling her all my troubles when I was a teenager, because I got in trouble a lot as a teenager. So she was a good listener. I see the spirit of Jesus in her, and that Jesus was also a good listener. Jesus had time to listen to people. The day that he was met the woman at the well, he had time to listen to her story and to care for her and to give her words of life and hope. I also see how Jesus did that with the woman that had been bleeding. She had been hemorrhaging for 12 years, and she came up behind Jesus in a crowd and touched his robe, and he said, "Who touched me?" And he turned and he stopped. He was actually going somewhere, but he stopped and he listened to this woman's story. He listened to her life and he cared for her. So I'm thankful for my grandmother because she taught me those things. The second person in my life that has taught me well is my mother. And today, I know it's not Mother's Day. I said this is kind of a preemptive strike for me for Mother's Day, because Bruce and I, we just graduated from seminary yesterday. And so my mother is here celebrating with me. And so I asked Arden if I could preach today, because my family was going to be here, and I really wanted to give this message while they were here. So thank you, Arden, for that. My mom, the word I chose for my mom is loyal. My mother is one of the most loyal people I know. I looked up the definition of loyal, and it says giving or showing firm and constant support or allegiance to a person. And that is what my mother has been to me. She's been an extremely loyal person my whole life, no matter what was going on in my life. And there's a lot of things going on in my life over the years. I remember one particular time I had moved away from home. I was young. I was about 19, I think. I was living in Spokane. I just flew the coop. I moved away and was living outside of Spokane. I had never lived in snow. I grew up in Southern California. And so I didn't know how to drive on icy roads, which was really a shame, because one day I was going to work and it was very icy and there was black ice on the road. And the people, when I left my house, they said, "Be really careful. It's really icy out there." You know, I'm thinking, okay, you know, but I didn't know what I was doing. And I hit the hill in my truck. I remember John Denver was singing, you know, I had him in the tape player. And I was going really slow. I was really being careful. But I tapped the gas, or I tapped the brake, and when I did, just lost complete control of my truck. I had a basket of laundry sitting next to me, and I thought, okay, this is it, because I had no control. So I just kind of ducked into my laundry and let her rip. You know? And my truck spun around, and ended up going, the back of the truck crashed into the side of the mountain. And the other side was like just a ditch. I mean, it was like a big, long hill. So thankfully, I went into the mountainside. And I, you know, John Denver was still singing after I woke, after I got up and looked. And I thought, I was just thankful to be alive. And I didn't, I was like, okay. But I was so scared. I was, you know, I had moved away by myself. I didn't have really anybody, any family or anybody around. And it was a very scary thing. And I got back in my truck and I drove home. Actually, it was amazing because five guys, I don't even know where they came from, these five big guys came running down the hill and they said, oh, you need help? And they pushed me out of the ditch. And I drove home, drove up in the driveway, and the first thing I could think of that I wanted to do was to call my mom because I knew she would be who I needed to hear that everything was going to be okay. And she was. You know, I got on the phone, started crying, and she's like, oh, it's going to be okay, it's going to be okay. I don't even know if she remembers that. But there's a verse in Luke that says, and I know it's a little bit strange, but bear with me. It says, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, you who kill the prophets and stone those sent to you, how often I have longed to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. And Jesus was talking about the children of Israel, and I like the metaphor because he used the metaphor of a hen gathering her chicks under her wings. And that reminds me of my mother, because my mother has always been gathering us. She still gathers us. We talk about she's kind of like a herding dog, you know, a border collie dog. You know, she's always herding the family together. She loves her family, and she is a strong support in times of trouble and in times of joy. And I am not the artist in the family, but I just wanted to give a little gift to remind her of who she is in my life, and she is my loyal and strong support. I see Jesus in my mom. The third example I have is my sister. And the word that I chose for my sister is friend, because Connie and I have been through a lot together. And she has been a strong support to me all of my life. We have had our differences, and we have had times when we didn't know if we were going to be friends. But the beautiful thing is that we are. And I feel like we could get through anything at this point in my life. What I love about my relationship with her is that she knows me better than anybody. She grew up with me. She knows the good, the bad, and the ugly. And she still loves me. In the last few years, we've lost our dad, and we lost our grandmother, and they were two very, very significant people that we love very much. And so we're losing our family in some ways together. And I'm glad that I have her by my side to go through that with me. So I started looking up verses on Jesus being our friend, you know, and Jesus being friends to, hey, we're the friends. I didn't even think of that. Friends Church, but we're friends too. But Jesus, when I started looking, what was amazing to me, looking up verses of Jesus calling people friends, the one that struck me, and don't take this the wrong way, Connie, but the one that stood out to me was Judas. Because when Judas came to Jesus to betray him, Jesus called him his friend. He said, friend, do what you came for. He called him friend. This is a guy that was going to betray him. And I thought, man, Jesus just never turned his back on anybody. And I think that Connie and I, there have been times where I think both of us thought, I don't know if this is worth it. And yet we hung in there with each other, and we worked through a lot of difficult things, and I think we're learning and growing together, and she's the person that will probably be with me for the rest of my life, I hope. I mean, we're walking through this life together. Considering that we're close in age, she'll probably be with me. And you know, like I said, not the artist, but I did the best I could. But Connie is my friend, and I'm thankful for her, and I'm thankful that she could be here today with me. I see Jesus in my sister. The next example is Emily. Emily is such a joy to me. And the word that I chose for Emily is faith. The definition I have for faith is complete trust or confidence in someone or something. When I think of Emily, and Emily called me last week even, she just called me up and she said, "Hey, you know, I think I understand why I've been going through all the things I've been going through," because she's had many trials in her life. And she said, "It's because I asked God to make me a woman of faith." And it's like, how do you become a woman of faith? You go through growing experiences that cause you to have faith. And she's been going through those things. When I think of Jesus and Jesus' faith, it led me to think about Jesus being tempted in the wilderness. Satan came to Jesus through those temptations, through that times of trial, and he said, if you're the Son of God, feed yourself. And Jesus went back, all three of the temptations, Jesus turned to what he knew was true from the scriptures. And so when Satan tempts him to feed himself, he says, it is written, man does not live on bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God. And then next, Satan says to Jesus, throw yourself down. If you're the Son of God, you won't die. You'll be okay. And Jesus says, it is also written, do not put the Lord your God to the test. And the third time, Satan comes and says, worship me and I'll give you everything. And Jesus says, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only. What I love about Emily is when she's going through her trials or when she's going through hard times, she clings to the truth. And I see that in her over and over and over. And I am thankful that I have a daughter that clings to the truth. And so I chose the word faith for Emily. Thank you, Emily. The next example, I know this is... bear with me, people, is my daughter, Marianne. She is a girl that knows how to celebrate. I'm sure she's loving that slide right now. This was Christmas, you know. Every year when we celebrate and we put up our tree, my kids go crazy and they have a lot of fun. And they decorate themselves. Marianne loves, she's been doing that since she was a little girl. This is the one that's getting married in 2 weeks. And Marianne has the gift of celebration. She knows how to celebrate. In the Old Testament, when the church got together, they didn't all live close by and they could hop in their cars and come to church and celebrate like we do. So they would have to travel for many days and they would have feasts where they would come and celebrate the Lord. And the kids loved it. I mean, it was a great time. People look forward to these feasts because it was time to celebrate. And in the Old Testament, it says, I was glad when they said, let us go to the house of the Lord. They were glad because it was fun. I mean, it was exciting. We're going to go and we're going to celebrate. And actually, I read a book by Tony Campolo. I don't know if any of you are familiar with him, but he wrote a book called The Kingdom of God is a Party. And I think that it's true. I think we're called as believers to come together and to celebrate our life in Jesus. Marianne loves to celebrate. It's been such a joy to watch her put her wedding together. I mean, it's like, I didn't have to plan it. People say, how are the wedding plans going? I think, talk to Marianne. She's doing the whole thing. She is a woman who loves to celebrate. And Marianne, you're going to have to come get this from me because I'm not walking back there. So thank you for your heart of celebration, and thank you for being my daughter. Not that you had a choice. I see Jesus in Marianne. The next example that I have is my daughter-in-law, Erica. And the word I chose for Erica, I originally had thought of compassion, because Erica is a nurse, and she takes care of children with cancer. She works in the pediatric oncology ward at OHSU, and she is an amazing woman. But the reason I chose hope is because Erica, the day after Marianne gets married, is going to shave her head. And it's called St. Baldrick's Day, I guess. She's doing it a little bit late because of the wedding. But she's shaving her head in to raise support and money for children with cancer. And she was telling me that she was going to have hope tattooed on her head. And so I've been thinking about that. And so I looked up the definition of hope, favorable and confident expectation. And that is what Erica brings to those children as she ministers to them. And she brings them the love of God and the heart of Jesus. And I am so blessed to have her in my life and part of my family. She is one of the most compassionate people I know. And when I think of who Jesus was, too, when you saw Jesus, that's what he did. He went and he healed people. And it over and over and over throughout the Gospels, it'll say that he was moved with compassion. And that's what I see with Erica. She is moved with compassion toward people. And she does offer them hope. I also thought about Jesus when he went to the tomb of Lazarus, and it says that he wept. And I have seen Erica come home after seeing people die or being with families and parents as their children are dying or have died. And she goes to funerals, and she is with these people, and she expresses the heart of Jesus. I see Jesus in Erica. And so, Erica, I chose the word hope for you, because I think you do bring hope to many, and you're going to have to walk up here too, because I'm not going back there. Any other sitting in the back? Oh, he's not even there, but little Noah, I had to put that in there because that's my grandson, and I love him. So, let's see. My next example. She's dying right now. That's great. is Carol Spencer. Carol has become a friend to me over the last few years, and she has been a woman of great courage. I have seen her give her heart and soul to many people as an instructor at George Fox. But I also saw her be willing to step even over that line of just being my instructor and becoming my friend. I was looking up, and I was thinking, what word would I choose for Carol? And I think of the word courage, because Carol is choosing to move far away to Indiana. And she keeps telling all of us, it's the place of the Underground Railroad. Like, that's going to get us all to come to Indiana. And I think, well, that's good, Carol. Thanks for that information, but I'm not moving to Indiana. But the New Testament words for courage is, they would say to be of good courage, but was to be bold and be confident. And she is a woman that has demonstrated the Spirit of God in her with her quiet confidence. When I thought about Jesus in that, and how did Jesus do that, I thought about Jesus in the garden, and before he was arrested. When he was in the garden, and the people came to arrest him, and they said, whom do you seek? Or he said to them, whom do you seek? And they said, Jesus the Nazarene. And he said, I am he. I mean, I'm thinking about that. I mean, he's standing there and he says, I am he. And it says in the Bible that when he said that, they drew back and fell to the ground. I mean, it's pretty dramatic. I mean, you know, it's just these little words, I am he. But I felt like Jesus let his life speak for itself. He didn't blow them away. It was the power that was in him that spoke. And I think that has been the way I've seen Carol throughout my time in her classes and spending time with her, is she lets her life speak for itself. And she's willing to step out into something new and continue to let her life speak and to let Jesus work through her. So I see Jesus in Carol, and that's why I chose the word courage for Carol. I told her she better come today. She did, so that's good. And my last example of women that we can see Jesus in is somebody you all know and love. And she is here. There she is. And that is Janet. The word I chose for Janet was grace. I was looking up, it was very personal to me because she's been very gracious to me with her words. And when I looked it up in, I always look up a lot of things, but I was looking it up in my concordance, and they talked about grace being used in the New Testament too as words of grace. And after Jesus was tempted in the wilderness, it says that he went to the synagogue to teach. And he sat down and he spoke the words from Isaiah that say, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, to release the oppressed and proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And it says, and the people, after he had done this, it says he closed up the books and everything and he sat down, and the people responded. It says, "All spoke well of him and were amazed at his gracious words that came from his lips. Isn't this Joseph's son?" they asked. And Janet is a woman of great grace, I think. And I think you've all been blessed by the grace that she probably has shown to all of you. I know she has shown that to me. I wanted to share one specific way that she did that just recently. Carol got me into doing a little seminar at the pastor's retreat on drama and ministry, which was an interesting experience, considering I don't feel like an expert on that at all. But I said yes, I don't know why, and so I went. And Monday, I went to school, and after school, I actually had a dinner appointment, and after that, I was off to the coast to go to the pastor's conference and do this little drama thing. So I was driving down there, and it was raining, and I was kind of a little bit nervous when I'm out by myself. I was driving by myself, going through that. In fact, when I was driving on the 6 toward the coast, I was thinking, man, I am just out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you know, if the car breaks down or something, I'm by myself. So I was a little bit nervous, but I was like, okay, I'm okay with that. But it was raining, it was getting darker, it was getting later, and I really was kind of nervous about being out there in the dark and not knowing where I was. I've been to Twin Rocks once, but I thought, I don't even know if I'll be able to see it if it gets dark, or I'll miss it or whatever. So I'm driving through the 6, and I was doing well, watching my speed pretty well. I tend to have a lead foot. And but then when I got, and there was only one other car on the road, and I actually passed it, and it was looked like an older car too. So anyways, I passed it, and I'm driving. They followed me all through the 6, you know, probably 50 miles through that pass. And I got out of there, and I don't know if you guys are familiar with this, you probably are, but going into Tillamook, there's like this huge straightaway. And I mean, and there was nobody on the road but me and this car that now was pretty far behind me. And so I just hit the gas. I thought, oh, I want to get there, because I knew I had 13 miles up the coast once I got to the coast. And so I hit the gas, and the guy's lights went on, and I thought, oh, you know, not good. And so it really unnerved me. I haven't gotten a speeding ticket since 1996. So I was kind of proud of that. But another one of those times I was in a rush. But anyway, so, you know, I pull over and roll down my window, and the police officer says, "So is there any reason why you were going so fast?" And I said, well, you know, I just started apologizing. I said, I don't really have a good excuse. I said, I really wanted to get there before dark. I told him I was going to a camp. I didn't tell him I was going to a pastor's conference, because I want to give pastors a bad name. So I just said, I'm going to this camp, and I really wanted to get there before dark. And I apologized. I said, I really don't have a good excuse. I just did that. So he gave me a ticket, and I went on my way, and I got to camp after dark because I got stopped. So and it was just, you know, I don't know. God just used that to humble me and to make me think about a lot of things. And it's kind of like when I ran into the ditch and I wanted to call my mom. Well, now I don't want to call my mom when things like that happen. I usually just want to call Bruce and get sympathy from Bruce. Like, oh, this happened to me, and now I feel awful. And I felt like the Lord just spoke to me and said, don't do that. I don't want you to do that. Just listen. And so I didn't. And I was so preoccupied with getting that ticket that I was having a hard time even relating with people much. And then I ran into Arden and Janet later, and I shared that with Janet, and she had such words of grace for me and such words of encouragement for me. And it was exactly what I needed. And I feel like that the Lord led me to her in that moment to let me know it's okay. It's okay that you messed up. It's okay that you did this. You know, we all do bad things sometimes. And so God used her to bring grace to me. So I chose the word grace for, and you have to come up here too because I'm not walking back there either. So, and she's a new person in my life that shows me great grace, and I am very thankful for her. So this, I know, you know, this might, I was a little nervous sharing all of this with you because I thought, well, this might seem a little bit self-indulgent, but I also feel like that for me, the journey that I have been on has so much to do with, God, who are you and who am I, and who am I as a woman, and how you want to use me. And I see how God wants to use all of us, men and women. But in the spirit of Mother's Day, I felt like I wanted to bring this to you and ask you to maybe just take a few minutes now and reflect on the idea of gratitude. And I like this definition. I'm really into definitions, like I told you. The definition of gratitude, the quality of being thankful, readiness to show appreciation, and to return kindness. And so I asked the question, how might God want you to demonstrate gratitude for the women in your life this week? And so as a preemptive strike, this gives you guys a week to really think about it. To just think about it and think about how have you seen the mothering of God. It may not even be your mother. It could be another woman in your life or, well, whatever. So I would just ask you now, maybe let's just take a few minutes of silence and just ask the Lord to show you that and maybe give you a way to demonstrate that gratitude to them. Thanks.